You are listening to Ismail Hassan. I'm the founder and head coach of Aikido of London. Welcome to the Aikido of London discussion series. Today's chat is with Ercan Eker, one of my oldest and most senior students at Aikido of London. And today he's picked a great, I think, a great subject. It's, it covers all of us. It's to do with Aikido and creativity, or you could argue martial arts and creativity. And does such a thing exist? But before we do that, Ercan, can you please introduce yourself? Firstly, hello, and please introduce yourself and give us an idea of who you are, a little bit of your background.
Hi, Ismail. Thanks for the intro. So my name's Jan. I've been practicing Aikido for about 16, 17 years or so. I'm an architect by profession. There's not much else to say, really. I mean, that's my profession, but I kind of err on the creative side a little bit. I dabble in photography quite a bit, and then I draw quite a bit, which is, you know, that's why I thought the topic of creativity would be a good one to touch on. Obviously, it's such a kind of really difficult subject to pin down. So, you know, like one of my favorite proverbs on art, they say, you know, a line is just the dot that went for a walk. So I'm sure we'll start one place and then it might touch on other topics along the way.
That's a great introduction. I like that, the dot that got carried on going.
Yeah, exactly. It just went for a walk and then it made a, you know, amazing painting or a drawing or something or other, you know.
It came alive. Very good. Thanks for your intro anyway. Thanks for joining me for the podcast. So it's an interesting area. I mean, I suppose most people in one way or another are curious or creative, maybe without even realizing it. I suppose what we're really talking about, and correct me if I'm wrong, is conscious creativity. That it's not something that just comes about because of just a talent towards something that's not particularly developed. It's just there, and which makes me think of martial art, and in our case, Aikido. And Iaido, actually, the sword work, even more, where one doesn't really associate creativity with it, because I suppose from a big perception of it would be that it's in many ways can be rigid and quite set in a particular series of patterns. And which for me, of course, it isn't. I, over the years and my exposure, I see a very living thing here, which obviously takes a bit of time to cultivate with enough dedication and focus and time. But what was the question about? What is it? I mean, you mentioned art itself, fine art, but how do you see that in Aikido per se?
Well, you know, kind of with creativity and with the other kind of arts around, you kind of feel it's this... it's this expression, you know, the art and the creativity. I think it's just an expression that you get out there. You want to express this moment, this thing that you've got inside. And it's how you kind of show that, but it's how do you achieve that in Aikido? Because as we've spoken about before, it's, you know, when you first start, I suppose, with anything, you can't just be creative all of a sudden out of the blue, and there's some constraints that you need to kind of work within. So if you're a painter, there are certain constraints to painting and whatnot. And in Aikido, I kind of feel it's similar. You know, you have to first go through the basics, know the vocabulary, know what those constraints are, and then work through them like more like a craftsman, I suppose, rather than a creative artist. You know, you go through that craft, you perfect all of these moves and all of your theory behind it and the practicals. And I think that gives you some kind of freedom, because it does sound very constraining. Obviously, you've got these very physical moves and these very basics, and you've got to follow them and keep following them, consciously. And you know, it is very kind of, it sounds quite rigid, but then you find freedom within those constraints, which is where I think, you know, the creativity comes in. You know, it doesn't have to be massive creative expressions that, you know, wow, where did that come from? It looks nothing like anything I've seen before. It could be just very minute expressions of yourself coming out. And you know that the expressions usually I find comes out the best when you're immersed in that moment. Quite often, you know, it just feels right when you do a move. It could be anything. You've just kind of blended into this thing and you've disappeared into it, immersed yourself, and you've expressed something that comes out. And it could be very minute, as you've said, you know, Iaido. It looks quite very rigid and very kind of, you can't see the creativity very often. But there have been moments in Iaido where it's been so fabulous a training session that, you know, you walk out and the colors are richer, the sounds are richer when you're listening to music, and you're in this mood where it's just like, you know, I can get that through art only. It's just a fabulous feeling.
That's is quite a an experience and an observation. I think I'm thinking how this cuts across not just what we do, but how something when you do see something that it does look spontaneous or more creative, that actually what underlies it is a very strong, a very powerful structure. And the structure is those repetitions that you really have to have a bit of faith in it. And I mean, if anyone is listening to it to this and is new and considering training, it's the fact that you have to accept a regime and have a bit of faith in it, which means it's demanding a question off of you. And if you what do you see when you do this? And if you don't see something that's vibrant and alive and potentially creative, it's either not for you or you can't see it. And if you can't see it, you can't see it. And that's the end of the story. But if you do see something that really catches your attention, then you've got to ask yourself a question. Like someone who's been doing like yourself nearly 20 years now, in my case, a double that now. And it continues, and you're not going to do that on the outset. Not that a lot of people think they do, but then again, maybe some do. I mean, we've seen them pop in. That simple move is a lot harder than they thought. That move that looks to their eye maybe a little predictable or contrived. As soon as they try it, it's anything but that, and they can't deliver it, and maybe either embarrassed or
Well, that comes, I suppose, really directly back to something we spoke about previously with that dancer. His name, I'm sure, what was his name? Robert Cohan.
Oh, yeah.
And where we kind of mentioned, you know, in a little extract where he was talking about Aikido and dance. Obviously, his profession is dance, and he was quite high up in his field.
He's extremely is at the top. He was at the top, yeah.
So he was talking about how, you know, the third, you know, different types of movement there are, but he wants to talk about the third and whatnot, and how you have to approach it. There's only one way of approaching it, and that's kind of moving, and it's done consciously. Which is funny because we're talking about something that isn't really, you know, that moment you've got is not done consciously. It's definitely the opposite, I would say. But you have to approach it through the conscious effort first. And as you were just mentioning, you know, some people come in and, you know, one simple move is very, very difficult to do. And I suppose, as Cohen was saying, it's kind of, you know, this conscious movement, how we don't move consciously day to day. You know, when you pick up a pen, it's not your very, you know, the conscious side of you actually going to pick up a pen. You just do it as automatically as anything, really. But you know, when new people are on the mat, you're asking them to do something, move their body in a certain way, consciously in a move that they've never done before. And you know, I don't know, they just seem to really get mixed up with it. But which is why where I suppose the basics come in.
this was this partly relates to an earlier podcast with Alex Barrera in Madrid about maybe a confusion of terminology with what he would term as positive habit building, and whereas I would call it, I thought, like, well, a habit is a habit, even a good habit isn't a good habit, but I mean something quite different from that that conscious training that isn't there yet, is that you have to be conscious of what you're doing. So there's micro details that we're all aware of that exist in Aikido, in weapons, in Iaido. And then you have to do that over and over again. And yet each class is different. The energy is different, maybe a different collection of people, a different intensity, a different mood, a different day. But the principle, the method continues. And until something begins to wake up, maybe the reason for it begins to make more sense. The feeling in your movements starts to take place. You know, a lot of it is how much time you're putting into it, how conscious you are, how much conscious effort there is, and in the end, regardless of how much ability one might have, but it takes time. There's no getting around that part. Go ahead.
Yeah, so kind of touching on that, you know, it's kind of we learn lots of things, and again, kind of an analogy between what we're doing in Aikido and analogy of, you know, a painter or somebody who draws. And it's kind of like, you know, you have to kind of strip back. It's to find this simplification of the move that we do. And, you know, some of the most artists that I really love, you know, people that draw portraits, for instance, but, you know, they've removed all of the complications, all of the, you know, a majority of the lines and the shading and whatever. They simplified it down so much, but still the resemblance of that person that's in the portrait, for instance, could be phenomenal. And I suppose it's similar with us, where, you know, at the beginning, you're learning so many new moves, you're learning so many concepts and so many, you know, analogies that are thrown at you all over the place. But it's actually when you get to that point where you're simplifying it, start simplifying and stripping away, you know, all the stuff that's not important, which is where the excitement comes in, where it becomes really, really interesting. It's not complicated anymore. It's just very, very simple. You strip everything away. You said, and finding that simple message within, you know, what's being taught.
You said something earlier, which is very interesting in relation to this part, is that that stripping away, that you're kind of entering a zone. Let's face it, there is a shift that is not your typical function of day to day life. It's a more intensified version, arguably. It's still yourself and your work. You're working with these constraints, and there's several constraints. I don't want to deviate too much here, but the constraints are you're working within the framework of the art, and so you can't deviate too much from that until you understand what it is. But the other constraint is yourself. Until true understanding begins to come through, you can't go around supposedly creating or drifting in it. But anyway, in this process, as it could be very early, it could be take a while. You get into this zone. But you said something interesting. You go off, and suddenly, maybe something is more highlighted. Maybe a color is richer. Something stands out better, clearer. Maybe your audio function. You can hear music emotively and with clarity in a way that you maybe haven't quite heard it, or you don't hear it as often in that way. It's all fresh and new again. And so that reminds me of the Shoshin, the beginner's mind, or the authentic mind. Yeah, no matter how much we progress, and no matter how much we work at what we do, we always come back to the beginning again. Each class is new, which gives us the chance to recreate ourselves, which means getting back to an essential thing again, but not the same. It's the same, but it's not the same, because you're six months older, a year older, with a series of experiences behind it, and we're bringing that into it as well. the tough part is to keep that fresh, so that when you do experience these things, that they create themselves. I think that is a creative process. Pardon me. And I think, and in that respect, it sounds very contradictory, because martial art is one of the first things you would guess at historically is destruction.
Yeah.
Is destruction or the enemy, and you could argue, create, what's the creativity? Well, how clever you are, that it's not just brute force, that is that you've got to be smart or tactical or strategic in technical in your approach, because you don't know what the enemy also carries, and the whole idea of rules start to fall apart, and that technically there's supposed to be rules of war, of engagement and stuff like that. But of course I'm talking about traditional classical warfare and not in the modern sense. But it's evolved out of that the samurai culture, in the case of the Aikido and Aikido, the emphasis has shifted, and it's a strange one, because historically a novelty is a complicated one. Some argue that the traditional martial arts have no novelty, they're not creative. The traditionalists want to adhere to a very rigid presentation, because this worked and the great masters did this, and who are we? And there's a side of that that's fully understandable. It's like, do you think you're as good as those guys? Do you think you live in a situation where you're that capable of playing with them and to come up with your own thing? So this is a little different from the creativity of a process of training we chatted about a little earlier. But at the same time, the ability to make it your own and then find out today what matters today, but adhering to the principles of Aikido in our case, you don't want to, because if you change it too much, it's no longer Aikido, and it's no longer this incredible art that's been handed over.
Exactly. And then if we go again to the analogy of art, you know, you have your canvas, you know, you have your material, which is pottery or something or other. So there are those constraints you've got to. And you know, as we were maybe talking about how, you know, what is, you know, what would our canvas be, and we were saying, you know, how, where is your expression, where is it coming from, and you know, where is it shown, where is it presented, where is it actually expressed? And it's within that moment, and it's within a moment, and it's so fleeting, and it just disappears. You know, you've done it, it's done, and you move on and you go on to the next one. But that moment is just so very exhilarating, and it just feels so right. Which is amazing. But then you touched on to the other side, which is the martial side. So how, you know, because we're talking about art and creativity and it all sounds very nice. But then, you know, and we can be chasing that moment that, you know, everything feels right. But then it is martial. And there is a technique in some cases and in most techniques, most cases. And that technique does lead to something that will potentially break an elbow or break an arm or do some serious damage. So I don't know how you kind of gel the two together, or, you know, is...
Yeah, that's the peculiarity. Really, oxymoron, isn't it?
Yeah, and how you actually look at this, how you actually look at Aikido. You know, you can look at it, it has two different faces. You know, it can be extremely creative and in your own way and expressing yourself in your own way, but then there is a technique there, and you know, there is some potential damage to be done as well.
But I wonder how much of that is also down to personality. So it comes to the question, I am studying a martial art, a Budo, and wonderful, and good for you. But then the flip side of that is, how martial are you? And I don't mean just physical aptitude, mentally, the mind. Does your mind think in a martial way? Does it see things like openings and a sense of timing and position and such things? And do you see how a Boken or a Jo, how to be adaptable in using it in that respect? And as much as one can learn a lot of these skills, if the mind works that way, then you forge the body that allows that more creative aspect of it within that Marshall framework to come out. The Marshall framework for a person like that is important, because there's no use becoming creative in a different direction when you've just walked into a bokken strike during training. You've walked into a fist. You've walked into whatever it is. So that's a constraint, I guess. So there's that constraint. There's the, and how much of that are you able to absorb in one's training to bring that side of you out, to see that decisiveness, that clarity. The teaching process is creative, I believe, but in terms of it's almost, I won't say a rock and a hard place, but you can't drift. Well, I say you can't drift, but in your own observation, you've been to many seminars, Urge, and how many adhere to that framework, and how many have drift dramatically from it, that one scratches one's head, and is it still Aikido? Is it still Iaido? What is your experience on that? And do you think they've been creative, or do you think they've lost both creativity and martial presence?
Yeah, well, I've seen some real shockers around, and they've kind of, obviously there are different styles of Aikido, and there are different emphases in those different styles. You know, there is an emphasis, and their emphasis is fine. You know, they emphasize, let's say, blending more, or some of them emphasize, more martial supposedly, or hard or soft. They've all got a different emphasis to them. But I've seen a few that whatever the emphasis is, the basics have to be the same, that the martial has to come first, basically, in my view. If there isn't this fear that you have when you walk on the mat and before you do an attack, if that isn't present, then I think it just doesn't work. For myself, what's kind of worked for me was this liveness to the art. Previously, when I was training elsewhere, it became just drudgery, just technical, and there was nothing to kind of ignite my imagination. It was kind of like, I was just a vessel being filled with all these techniques and ideas and these physical aspects of the art, but nothing to ignite the imagination, and nothing to kind of hurt you up and think, oh my God, Jesus Christ, this is really real. Oh, I've got to watch myself. And then, when you're ignited that way, you're all of your kind of, everything perks up, all the cells in your body just perk up and say, okay, watch yourself, what's going on.
Another paradox, isn't it? That in a sense, if you get that balance between technique and spirit, stroke, fear and danger, which we've discussed before, it wakes up, fingers crossed, it wakes up something in people. And I believe, I know so, that is also the source of creativity. I think some of the most vibrant artists in any field, not necessarily martial art, there is a fact, fear is a factor. And fear is seen as a negative thing rather than that. Paradoxically, you're more alive.
It's definitely not been a negative. Well, for my training, I think it was the only thing that kept my training going. Without it, I don't think it would give me this this kick to carry on and keep going. It was definitely in the background the whole way, and without it, I don't think it would be the same. The training just wouldn't be the same.
Yeah, I think that has to be kept, and I think it's one of the major ingredients. It's the Kiriotoshi article, my latest, the little video clip. Something so simple as a cut, and that you have to deflect the weapon, which essentially means you're deflecting the enemy, whether it be their mind and their position. You're parrying their weapon and you're cutting them down in one simultaneous thing. And that kind of gets rid of all the fat, gets rid of all the tricks and the cleverness and all the unnecessary stuff. It reduces it to two entities approaching each other, one attacking and one at its most basic level, one attacking, one doing the parry and the cut. The paradox is that that to get to do that really well with that kind of and that bit of fear operating there is not easy. And but once you start getting it, and it becomes natural, and it becomes a reflex, and it just happens. One, it's a great achievement in itself. Two, the process that you go through in order to achieve that, I think, if we broaden a little bit, that's the part that maybe runs into other areas of one's life. That whatever it is that's changed in you, that's allowed you to do that in an effective way, has changed something in you, and that change is a creative thing, and that I think affects you. If you said you're an architect, and maybe when you're drawing, or maybe when you're taking a photograph, maybe the eye sees something a little different, or maybe the images is more vibrant, more alive, and therefore you can frame or create your picture in a very different way than before. This is just a thought. It may not affect at all, yeah. But I'm guessing that it will. Would you like to elaborate on that?
Well, I was actually talking with someone about this the other day, and actually, it's been over the years. I've heard quite a few of my friends in Aikido who have, you know, said things about how Aikido has impacted on their lives, and it's been so dramatic. You know, it's changed their lives for the better. They've become so much more confident, so much more expressive, so much this, so much that. And I'm quite jealous. I know Aikido has changed myself and has had a major impact on me personally, to my personality, to my behavior, but for the life of me, I can't pinpoint it. So whereas everybody else is very, very clear on how it's impacted on their lives, I can't see it, and I'm not sure why that is. I'm not sure why. I really don't know. I mean, it might have something to do with the way I train as well. It's kind of like none of it is conscious. None of it is, I can't break it down, you know, a technique and say, oh, I did it this way and that way. I just kind of try and feel it in the body. And I just feel it the way it comes and then it goes. It's just very primal for me. It's very in the body. It's very emotional. It's not something I can break down and say, yeah, there's no kind of clarity for it. There's no clean lines for me.
Well, that's not necessarily a bad thing, what you're saying. It reminds me of, I remember doing several art exhibitions, another wing to my to some of my past activities, and some very talented artists and photographers were involved in one of the exhibitions. And I just recently wrote about it. I recalled asking each one of them. They're called the Nolo Five, so obviously five artists. And I was asking each one to give a kind of a brief description of their work, one of themselves, and one of their of this particular work for this particular exhibition. And one of the photographers, a New York-based photographer, he turned around and said, well, if I could say it in words, there would be no need for photographs. And I thought, my immediate thought was, oh, that's a bit kind of indulgent and pompous, you know, which it may well have been, but it came across that way. But actually, there's an incredible truth to it. And I was discussing this with somebody, and I can't recall who, I think last week, that in the end, when good Aikido has been done, if we just stick to this and not the broader context here, when good Aikido has been experienced, that moment, as we have already covered, I'm not sitting down. And if I look at a student, or if I'm in it myself, I'm not sitting down saying, oh, the balance between the yin and yang is just right. Oh, I was very centered today. Oh, my, the connection was incredible. Oh, these are just words we use after the fact. That maybe a teacher has to learn it in order to try and use verbal transmission as well as the physical training process. And in the end, it's like when it's especially when it's on a particularly high level, wow, that was fantastic. That's what I'm looking for. That's what it is. And the rest of it you can't explain because it's the experience, surely. So maybe, but I think I'm crossing to a slightly different area. If others have turned around very specifically to the areas of confidence, and I was thinking of that, I was thinking of that with younger people in particular, that's also to do with giving someone an avenue to express an innate and natural part of what many people carry, and something that I would argue is discouraged in society, is that we do have martial quality of some level or other, every one of us, by virtue of the fact that we're alive. And when it's allowed to express itself in a non-destructive way, it opens up the channels, all the padlocks that hold you back, maybe because of the way you were raised, or and I don't mean negatively. It's just that we will have certain constraints that serve a purpose, but then creatively, it's desirable to unlock them. Confidence, lack of confidence, could be part of that reason. Unaware and not quite knowing how to move forward is another reason. I didn't know I could do that, and it's a discovery process. In the process of that discovery, a very big terminology that we use a lot, and here I am saying that words don't always cover it, but the word is sort of meaningless, and it means everything and nothing in a way, and that is to find your center, which is, and people usually think physical, that this is a bit in your belly, just below your belly button, and on one, you know, one dimensional way, there is truth to that. But in a much deeper and much more important and valuable way is to be yourself. That is to be in your skin and sit in that position, and which means your body relaxes. And confidence should come from that. This is what you are. This is who you are. It's not a static thing. It'll continue. There's still a lot to learn and discover. But you start to get an essential. Characteristic you're realizing it's already there, is that it has to settle and you have to realize, which is back to consciousness again.
But I think you also that it's how you find that center. And I think Aikido is really phenomenal how it allows you to find that center, because there was a saying I heard a long time ago, but I can't remember the exact words, but they say, like, you know, that the center is ordered around disorder. So in order to find your center, and, you know, in order to find where you are in this world, there's got to be disorder around it, because, you know, you can't be perfectly balanced and straight. You're always kind of losing balance here or there and then gaining it again. Yeah. And in Aikido, it's fabulous that you're basically, when you give the attack, you commit, you let yourself go, you give the attack, you don't really know what's going to happen, but you still let go. And with that confidence, with that knowledge that you're going to be okay.
Yeah, you shouldn't know what's going to happen. If it's done correctly and taught correctly, you shouldn't know what's going to happen. You know what you just said
exactly
there?
Right.
It comes back to fear, I think, Urjit. It's to find what I think you hit on the spot really well there. We can do many things to find our center, and many find it in life in general, and many don't. But finding oneself in that position is a wonderful mm-hmm. thing. But there is something about loss of balance, dealing with fear, as many have described, being in the center of a maelstrom. Sounds like a big word, doesn't it? Stuff is happening, and you're not necessarily in control of it. And it's your the adrenaline is rushing, and your heart is beating, and also there's excitement when that happens. Back to this life force. Mm-hmm. Again, and you know, if you've done a few of those and you've learned to live with a little bit of that, you've learned to be solid, reasonably solid, within a very a reasonably uncertain situation. It's still controlled in many mm-hmm. ways. It's not outright anarchy by any means, even though it may feel like it at times. But during that sort of chaos and recovery and reason and order, as they come and go and come and go between them, you find your center within that. And that's an amazing thing to achieve. That's a, And you need those qualities. Or you need that little bit of that danger, a little bit of that fear, a little bit of that that risk factor in it. And if you get if you get carried away, it can become oppressive or overbearing, and then the creativity is gone. It's become more of an oppressive and destructive process. If you pull back from that and you never quite reach that level of push or of intensity, then it's a bit predictable. It's a bit too safe, I suppose, is the right word. You need a bit of both. We're all different, and different folks, different strokes. Maybe what gets you up and vibrant and energetic could be very terribly scary for somebody else, and for somebody else it's not enough. They need more exhilaration. But back to the constraint, back to that framework.
But I don't know. I think you can find that fear as long as you just let go. And you know, like we've mentioned previously, that whatever energy you give forward, so however strong your attack is, then you're going to be receiving that, you know, that energy backwards. You know, the guy is going to be doing the technique on you. You've attacked, your opponent's going to be doing the technique on you, and you know it's going to hurt in some sense. And you have to kind of survive that technique. And it's kind of you committing yourself and committing the attack 100%. Or, you know, as you usually say, don't give 100%, give 80%, give 90%, but don't give 100. Because it's interesting, you know, when we talk about how you start this technique again, fresh every single time. And you have to start it honestly and kind of give yourself over and trust that you're going to survive this, and trust your opponent that they're not going to basically abuse that commitment that you've given them, because you've given them something very valuable. You've given yourself to them to do as they will, so they can protect, so they can actually do their technique and practice their technique.
That's interesting.
But you know, you're molding yourself. Really, kind of like who's molding who, really?
The word vulnerability, isn't it? That's where the fear. If you allow yourself to be exposed, rather than building a technical library, rather than building an armory of technique and such, that nulls you, that dulls you to a situation. It's when you're vulnerable and you can sense where the danger is in you and where it's coming from without, and that's some people get too uncomfortable with that, but it's that's the quality here is vulnerability. I've heard many say that. Why are you asking me to do it this way and pull back and do that? Mm-hmm. I feel so vulnerable. And my answer is invariably, that's wonderful, because now you've got a chance of feeling and sensing where it's coming from, because it's coming from your skin. It's coming from your bones now. It's not coming from your brain.
Exactly. You're always going to be vulnerable. Yeah, you're going to be vulnerable somewhere, you know, at some point. So you might as well practice being vulnerable and reacting to it. How do you react to it? How do you survive it? How do you, you know, blend with it to get up and do something else? And being vulnerable is pretty amazing, you know, handing that over. But it's interesting to see how, you know, the initial, again, going back to Cohen and the story that you mentioned, where, you know, he'd see some dancers and they're about to perform, and before they've even actually got onto the dance floor, he said, no, that wasn't right. You didn't start right. Before they've actually started. And it's kind of an idea.
They're showing them what they've learned. Right,
So I mean, it's really interesting. Also, in when we practice, you see the initiation. You know, two people are faced off. They're facing each other off. One is going to attack. The other one's going to do technique on him, and so forth. But it's interesting to see the initial attack from the person just before the attack happens. You can kind of see this. You know, is it right? Is it not? You can see it before the attack's already happened. You know, somebody raises his arm, they're going to attack, and you can see that all the energy and everything is in the face. You know, they've put so much energy and rage into the face or the shoulders or whatever. You know, there's nothing actually left over to just commit and go forward. it's really interesting to see, and it tells a lot about people as well. And I suppose how they practice and where they feel it, you know, when they practice, is it more conscious? Is it more in the more cerebral? Is it more within the body? It's a really interesting point. I think this is a very, very interesting point in when you see people practicing, it's just the point before the attack, before it's at the techniques that even happened.
If someone is even observing properly, how often do people close their eyes at a critical point? Uh-huh. It's a very subconscious thing. It's not a conscious thing. So a lot of opening up the vulnerability, opening up the centering, the connecting. But in the broader sense, how do you feel? I've mentioned, and you've mentioned again, you know, you've left a class, and it's really brought something wonderful in how you've experienced and feel other things. Can you sort of broaden on that? That aspect.
Sorry,
of it.
How do you mean?
For example, you left a class and you're. Mm. I've already described it as you're in a zone. Something happened that you're on a high. Let's put it that way. You're on a high.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. It's definitely a high.
And then.
I mean, it's kind of very euphoric. This is a very euphoric feeling, and I'm not sure whether it's just me. I get euphoric very easily. Or, people have, react to different things in really different ways. But for myself, when I'm in the zone in that way, I do get very euphoric. I can obviously do that whether I'm on top of a mountain, that can happen. Or, one of my favorite stories was when I used to be an architect. Well, when I used to be at architectural school, used to kind of draw quite a lot. And it used to be by pencil and paper basically still, and one occasion I was drawing for 3 days straight with no sleep, and just before the hand in I went for a walk at night about 3 a.m into the park, and I was high as a kite, and I had no idea. I didn't realize I was looking down at little leaves and, oh my god, isn't that beautiful, and looking up at the lights and I was just high as a kite. But that came from being in that zone over and over again, this pencil touching the paper and then running it across the page for 3 days straight. And it was an amazing feeling. But, I get that from Iaido because it's very, very, just very precise. It's all very, you're just drawing a line and these lines are beautiful. It's all geometry. It's all really connected. It's very, we're talking very ephemeral here, sort of thing, but it's a really beautiful feeling.
And do you, that when you and the, what I meant by that then is what you've just described. If you, let's say next day you've gone to work, you're back at your architectural capabilities here. Does any of that carry through? Does it affect any of your creatively or in any other way your work? Has it made you a better architect? Has it made you more creative? More? Do you pay attention to details even more than you already do?
No, I don't know. I mean, I appreciate. I seem to appreciate things more in their simplicity. I really don't know what kind of impact it has. Again, it comes down back to that thing about, breaking this thing down. What impact does it have on my life? It's a very difficult thing to verbalize because it's just so holistic. It's just so in me. It's kind of, I don't know where it comes from. I don't know what it does. Hmm. All I know is I'm not the same person I was from previous lessons, or from 5 years back or 10 years back or whatnot, but I can't verbalize what that is. I do know Aikido's given me a definite more comfort in how I move, and it's just really being comfortable in the body. And the body, this body's been with me since the beginning, so it's a really important thing to feel. Really being comfortable in your body.
Appreciate it. Know what it can do, what it can't do, not be satisfied with it, but be at peace with it, and use it to its ability and capability.
I mean, but then maybe also when we're talking about, you know, the vulnerability that you have to give over for your partner to do the technique on you, you know, you give the vulnerability so that then you can't give the vulnerable, you can't be vulnerable without then the sensitivity coming in afterwards, because you've given something over and it's being, you know, the energy and that's being manipulated in some sort of way. But then you've got to be sensitive, I think, enough also then to read what's happening and what they're kind of, how they're using that energy, how it's being manipulated. And I don't think you can have one without the other. And I suppose in life as well, it's kind of, you know, you've given this vulnerability over in your day to day, how you behave, but you've got to be then, you know, sensitive enough to read what's happening and what the reactions are of other people's. So that could be one aspect, you know, just reading people a little bit better, or, you know, what the situation is, you know, one thing, my action has led to this reaction. It's, you know, I don't know, kind of vulnerability and sensitivity seems to be
I think you're right. I think there's what would they do go hand in hand, and you can't have one without the other. But I think the ability to sense and feel and adapt to how you deal with one to the other person, to another person, and to a different day. That's another way of being calling it flexibility. And flexibility means means also sensitivity, and not just a crashing through things, and versatility, pliability, and yet centered, and yet a part that doesn't change, a part that's solid and centered and robust. It's a lot of words.
I think those words that you're saying, adaptability and thing, I think that is the major impact. Now I'm thinking back, I think that would be the major impact Aikido has had. I think it's the adaptability, just adapt to things and situations.
It's what I like about it is a description I gave a while back, where about the benefits, and which are, the list goes on, and we can't cover it all here. We're barely managing to cover the creative impact on it.
But yeah, I think the dot is definitely
it's gone for a walk. Yeah,
but you know, if you look at this the podcast and listen back to it, there is so much to say, so much more to say. But then you can take bullet points from it, and it says everything. Mm. Like we said previously, it's kind of, you know, you've got these fabulous techniques and moves and you're doing, but you want to basically just simplify it back to a few things. You know, the bullet points would be, I suppose, sensitivity, fear, making yourself vulnerability, and those things really say a lot.
No. I think it's a good time to close this, and we'll come back to this one, and we'll trace it. And look, I appreciate you coming in. Podcast again, for a remote podcast from South London this time. But it is excellent, and it's covered us again. And this has been very interesting. You got me on a train of thought here to come up with other stuff. And let's do some more bullet points and see if we can make that dot walk a little further and have a long line again. And thank you, Urgent. Take care.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to the Aikido of London discussion series.